Jesus tells us to take up our cross and follow him. You're listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities, and it is our aim to lead you to the cross through the teaching of God's word.
Come break our culture, tear down our pride. Lord, take your church and purify. Oh, we are ready to stand in your love. Come, King Jesus, deliver us. Oh, my King is coming. Restless hearts, be still.
There were times when God spoke to the prophets, and he would speak to them in visions and in dreams. And so you see God speaking to Daniel, for example, in dreams over and over. Sometimes he would have waking visions where he was standing there during the day, and all of a sudden a vision would come upon him. Basically, what a vision is, it's a waking dream. When you're dreaming, what's happening is your mind is going in certain directions. When you have a vision, whether it's a dream that comes from God or it's a waking vision, what's happening is God is taking over your mind and he's showing you something. Like there's a little button back there or something. Dink! You know, and off we go. In any case, God spoke to the prophets in interesting ways. I'm reading in the book of Ezekiel right now. And so Ezekiel is a crazy prophet. The guy's crazy. If you ran into Ezekiel, you'd think he was nutso. And so God's always telling Ezekiel to do weird things. And so, you know, the book starts off with Ezekiel having this vision on by the river Kabar, and he sees angels and the throne of God and that kind of stuff. And then as you go on, God starts having this guy do kind of life pictures. And so he told Ezekiel one time to build a little model of the city of Jerusalem and then to shave his head and take the hair from his head and a third of it, burn it up in the fire, and a third of it, chop it up, and a third of it, throw it up in the air and chase it around with a sword, right? And then he says, and when people ask you, Ezekiel, what are you doing? Okay, so just imagine that. I build this little model of Jerusalem. I shave all the hair of the voluminous amount of hair that I have. I shave it all off. I divide it into thirds. Third of it, I burn it. Third of it, I hack it with a sword. And a third of it, I throw up in the air and I chase it around. Am I crazy? That's crazy, right? And then God again goes, Ezekiel, when they ask you, tell them this is what's happening. And what he was doing was giving an illustration of what was happening to the people in Jerusalem while these guys were in captivity. In another instance, this is my favorite one. God speaks to Ezekiel and he says, what I want you to do today is that I want you to go and I want you to dig a hole in the side of your house. So these guys had mud brick houses. So dig a hole in the side of your house and start carrying the furniture out. And when they ask you, what are you doing? And so again, you got to picture this whole thing. So there's Ezekiel. He comes at the side of his house with a pick or whatever, and he starts tearing apart the mud bricks. He's got this big old hole in there. He goes walking into the inside of his house. He grabs the furniture, starts taking it out and putting it on the front lawn or whatever they had there, and does it one piece of furniture after another. And then you can imagine this crowd of refugees coming in. He's in a refugee camp. This crowd of refugees coming up around him and going, Ezekiel, what are you doing now? And then God says, and this is what you're going to say to them. This is what they're doing in Jerusalem right now. They're under siege. They're busting out the side of their house because they can't go out their doors, and they're trying to take as much goods as they can with them. Pretty effective, right? But pretty weird, right? And so God spoke through Ezekiel. And in interesting ways. I had a guy who came in for counseling this one time, and he was a weirdo. And he was trying to tell me all these things that God had told him and all that kind of stuff. And because he was a weirdo, I just dismissed him. And then I'm going through the book of Ezekiel, and God makes the point, Ezekiel's a weirdo. And I was like, yeah, Lord. And he goes, don't just look at people and think that I'm not talking to them just because they're weirdos. And so, you know, he straightened out my heart on that kind of stuff. I still think he was a weirdo though. But anyway, so he used to speak in time past through the prophets, and now he does it through the Son, has in these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom he's appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the worlds. And so when you're talking about the Son being the one that God is speaking through now, it's the idea that the Son is the final, authoritative, and complete revelation. Jesus is telling us what the Father is like for real. When you go through the Old Testament prophets and you look at what God was doing with them, he was always trying to reach a group of people, and a lot of times the people were in rebellion against him. A lot of times they had the wrong attitudes towards the Lord because they didn't know him very well. And what God was trying to do was reconcile his people to himself. And he was using the prophets to show his heart. And so even in the prophets where there's judgment, you can see the heart of God even in the judgment. Why will you die? Why don't you turn and live? This is also in the book of Ezekiel. And God talks about the fact that he's not willing that people should perish. We even have that in the New Testament. He's not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. And this is God's heart. So what God is doing through the prophets almost continually is trying to show these people who they're actually dealing with. And sometimes it's in the area of holiness, sometimes in the area of grace, sometimes it's in the area of righteousness. You know, whatever he's doing, what he's trying to do is reveal himself to these people. And in the last days, he's revealed himself to us through his Son. And his Son is the best revelation, because when you're looking at Jesus, you're looking at everything that the Father is. There's a passage in John 1:18 that says, "No man has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he has revealed him." And what that's talking about is twofold. One of the things that the Lord's talking about in that passage is the fact that it has always been the job of the Son to be the revealer of the Father. And so when you're in the Old Testament and you see, for example, God coming up and talking to Abraham, having a conversation with him and sitting down and eating with him, guess who it is? It's Jesus. That's called a theophany, or actually a Christophany. And so it's always been Jesus's job to reveal the Father. And when you get to the New Testament, you have the ultimate revelation of the Father. And so when you're looking at Jesus, you can tell what the Father's like. I always had this thing with Jesus and the Father. I always thought that the Father was kind of, you know, he's a little bit rowdy and he gets ticked off and you got to kind of watch yourself around him. But Jesus is really kind and he's really nice and he's not going to get all over your case, right? Is any of that true? Did Jesus ever get on anybody's case? Yeah, one of the most radical chapters in the whole Bible is Matthew chapter 23, where he's going after the Sadducees and the Pharisees and the scribes and the chief priests. And it's just one rip after another one after another one. And it's because these people are so hard-hearted and they're so wicked to each other and to the people that they're supposed to be over. And he goes right after them, right? When you look at Jesus in the book of Revelation, is Jesus messing around in the book of Revelation? He's coming back and he's pretty serious, isn't he? He's going to judge the world. And so that's Jesus. And so you see the judgment part of Christ, but you also see the gracious part of Christ. And you see exactly the same thing in the Old Testament. God is gracious to his people. God is judgmental at certain times. God rebukes and God encourages. The difference between the New Testament and the Old Testament is in the Old Testament, you got better than, you know, if you go from the time of Moses to the time of Christ, you got 1,500 years there. When you're talking about the New Testament, you're talking about you know, just under 40 years of history. And you see both things in the New Testament too. There are times when people are getting judged, and there are times when God's being totally gracious towards them. And so Jesus is the revealer of the Father. So if you want to know what Jesus thinks about you, you can go and you can look at what he says and how he treats people. And so, woman at the well, Nicodemus, I love these passages, Zacchaeus, Peter, you know, all these different guys who have all these different, Judas, all these different guys who have different things going on. You can see how Jesus deals with them. And that's what the Father's like. What he's doing is showing you exactly what the Father's like. He's the ultimate expression of who the Father is. When you're talking about prophets in the Old Testament, there was a point where Moses was having a problem with his sister Miriam. She didn't like who he married. Actually, he married a black lady, and she didn't like it. The reason I know she's a black lady is because she's called an Ethiopian. And so if you know anybody from Ethiopia, and I do, they're pretty black, right? And so she doesn't like it that he's marrying a black lady. And so she starts this little insurrection against Moses, gets Aaron in on the whole thing. And she basically says, you know what, we're prophets too. Moses, you're not the only deal in town. We are also prophets. And then God starts dealing with her. And basically, this is one of the things that God says to her. God says, hear now my words. If there's a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly, and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And then what happens is God makes her leprous as white as snow. I like that because God goes, you like white? I'm giving you white. And he makes her as white as snow. And then Moses pleads for her to the Lord. And God says, you know what? If her father had spit in her face, she'd be unclean for 7 days. Literally, that's what he says. And then he goes, you go pray for her and I'll forgive her. And so that's what Moses does. And so she's healed at that point. Kind of some interesting stuff there. When God's saying, hear now my words, if there's a prophet, I'll speak to him in a vision or in a dream. God's speaking to her face to face when he's saying that. The only time that Miriam ever gets a face-to-face, a solo with God is when God's rebuking her for capping on her brother Moses, her little brother Moses, by the way. In any case, it's kind of interesting. And so when the sun comes, it's not in visions, it's not in dark sayings, it's not in dreams that the Father's revealed, it's through the life of Christ. And so he's the ultimate revelation. There are some people who think that that means that after Jesus, there is no more prophecy. And the problem with that is after Jesus, there is prophecy. Okay, so you go through the book of Acts, there's a guy named Agabus who's a prophet. And there's another guy named Philip who has 7 daughters who prophesy. And so they act as prophetesses. It never calls them a prophetess, and that's a big deal, but they prophesy. In the book of 1 Corinthians, it talks about the gift of prophecy. And so the fact that Jesus has come does not mean that the gifts of the Spirit are not still in existence or that God won't speak to you personally. It's just that you're never going to be like him. Nobody's ever going to be like him. And nothing that you hear is ever going to be like anything that you hear from Christ himself. That's what's being spoken about there. So he has in these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things. Whom he appointed heir of all things. Oh, you know what? I have a couple other things I wanted to say about Jesus and I skipped in my notes. When you see Jesus, you see the real thing. You see it in his attitudes. And so Jesus in John 14:9 says, have I been with you so long and yet you've not known me, Philip? He who has seen me has seen the Father. So how can you say, show us the Father? And so when you look at Christ, you look at his attitudes towards situations and people and things and that kind of stuff, you're looking at exactly who the Father is. And so when Philip comes up and says, show us the Father and we'll be satisfied. He goes, Philip, how long have I been with you? When you're looking at me, you're looking at the Father. And so same-o. Then in his actions, in John 5:19, it says, then Jesus answered and said to them, most assuredly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he sees the Father do, for whatever he does, the Son does in like manner. And so when the Father is acting, the Son is acting in like manner. He does exactly the same things that the Father does. And specifically, Jesus was talking about in his ministry that the Father was showing him things. So his actions, and then finally his words. Do you not believe, this is John 14:10, this is after 14:9, obviously. Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father in me? The words that I speak to you, I do not speak on my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does the works. And so it's his attitudes, it's his actions, it's his very word that exemplifies who the Father is. And so that whole idea that the Father is, you know, he kind of has bad days and then he can have some good days, but Jesus is always the good guy, that's not biblical. And again, that needs to be taken care of in your mindset. Goes on and says, whom he has appointed heir of all things. He's the heir of all things. Everything is going to be given to Christ. There's a passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Let me show you. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, it says in verse 22, for as in Adam all die, even so Christ all shall be made alive. Talking about the resurrection. But each one in his own order, Christ the first fruits. In other words, he's the first one raised. Afterward, those who are Christ at his coming. Then comes the end, when he delivers the kingdom to God the Father, when he puts an end to all rule and all authority and power, for he must reign till he has put all enemies under his feet. The last enemy that will be destroyed is death, for he has put all things under his feet. Quote from the Old Testament. But when he says all things are put under him, it's evident that he who put all things under him is accepted. Now, when all things are made subject to him, then the Son himself will also be subject to him who put all things under him, that God may be all in all. And so you have this situation where God is going through and basically giving the whole universe to Jesus. And ultimately, what Jesus is going to do is pass it off to the Father because he's subject to the Father. By the way, that is not a verse that's saying that Jesus is less than the Father, right? And here's why. Is my wife supposed to be subject to me? Is my wife supposed to submit to me? I need to hear an amen from my wife. Ephesians chapter 5 talks about I'm supposed to be like Christ, she's supposed to be like the church. And so just like the church is subject to Christ, so she needs to be subject in everything, and I need to be the guy who loves her and takes care of her and protects her and all that kind of stuff. And it's the roles that are given, okay? And so does that mean that I'm more human than Bobby is? It has nothing to do with our nature. Does that mean I'm smarter than Bobby is? Probably. No, I'm just joking. No, it does not. It does not mean that. Does that mean I'm less emotional than Bobby is? Anything about emotion in there? Nope. All it means is it's a role. And so her being subject to me has nothing at all to do with her nature. She's just as human as I am. And probably most of you would say, I think she's a little bit more human than you, right? And so the whole idea of submission has nothing to do with nature. So you go to work, you have a boss. Are you supposed to submit to the boss? Does that mean they're more human than you? Nope. Has nothing to do with nature. Does that mean they're smarter than you? Nope. Does that mean they're more talented than you? Nope. You know, and so you go through the whole list of, you know, what it means to be human, and none of that has anything to do with nature when you're talking about submission in the Bible. And so the fact that the Son submits to the Father does not mean that the Son is less in nature than the Father. In fact, the fact that he's called the Father, you got the Father and the Son, literally means they're of the same nature. My son is of the same nature as me. Got an old picture. My son was probably, gosh, he had to be maybe 5, 6 years old, something like that. And we used to have this thing that we went to, it's called the Zoo Snooze. We went down to Portland and spent the night down there. Well, he wanted to go, and so I went with him. And as I'm walking through the zoo, my Sunday school administrator was behind me. Her name was Robin, and she took a picture of me and my boy. And we're going along, and it like seriously, it looked like me and mini-me. Just the weirdest thing. We have exactly the same, we're taking the same step, we have exactly the same gait, all that kind of stuff is going on. And it's because he's got my nature, right? And so I'm human, he's human. I have certain DNA, he's got at least half of my DNA in him. And so there's a likeness there. And so when you're talking about a father and a son, you're talking about the same nature. And so again, you have that whole thing. But Jesus is the one who's going to be the heir of all things. He's going to be the one who comes and takes over the world. He's going to be the one who destroys the world. He's going to be the one who makes the new heavens and the new earth. And he's going to be the one who rules over the new heavens and the new earth in the name of God the Father. And that's why we get to rule and reign with him, because he's the heir of all things. It goes on and says, through whom also he made the worlds. Through whom also he made the worlds. And so not only is Jesus the heir of all things, he's the creator. And so in John chapter 1, in verse 3, it says, all things were made through him, talking about Jesus, and without him, nothing was made that was made. This is important when you're talking to cultists, because they'll say that there was a time when there was no son. So in John's gospel, it says in the beginning, and it literally means from the vanishing point, NRK means from before time. NRK, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And in Greek, it literally says, and God was the Word. And then later on, it says, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And then it goes on and says in verse 3, all things were made through him, and without him, nothing was made that was made. So all things are made through Jesus, and without him, nothing was made that was made. And so if Jesus is a created being, who made him? According to John 1:3, all things were made through him. You know what all means in Greek? All. And without him, nothing was made. You know what nothing means in Greek? Nothing was made that was made. And so if Jesus is a created being, he would have to create himself, according to John 1:3. You ever seen anybody who created themselves? Is that possible? You don't exist, but then you decide, I think I'll exist, but you can't decide because you're not there. So how do you create yourself, right? Yeah. But in evolution, you don't have a will involved there. And so it talks about the fact through whom also the Father, he is who's been talking about there, spoken about there, made the worlds. The word for worlds there is eons. And it's a word that can mean worlds. And so it's one of those passages that lets you know that there's more than one world. And so it can mean worlds. It can also mean ages. So not only did he make the worlds, he made the time that the worlds are running through. This is one of those passages in the Bible that is an indicator that the guy who wrote it is speaking about things that he could never know. Because when you're talking about the creation, we've talked about this before, time is an element of the creation. And so it's not like you had time before the creation. You can't. So when you're looking at time in the universe, time changes depending on where you're at and how fast you're going. And so where you're at, Interstellar is a good example of that.
You've been listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities in Kennewick, Washington. If you're wanting to know more about what it means to follow Christ, then please contact our church office by phone at 509-736-2086. You can also look us up online at calvary-tricities.org. There you will find a wide variety of Steve's teachings to listen to or to download for free. If you want to join us for church sometime, we're located at 10611 West Clearwater Avenue in Kennewick, Washington. Our Sunday service times are 8:30 and 10:30 a.m. and 6 p.m. We also meet on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. We hope you have been blessed today and will join us again next time on Crosswalk.